Hey guys, this is WMUC FM College Park. You're hanging out with that fresh radio piece getting started with our 7 to 9 hour shift here for you guys. We have a great show.
Yeah, we got a lot going on today. We have Hannah Sassman calling in from Prometheus Radio Project. We have Diane Wilson, founding member of Code Pink, and powerful lady indeed. She's going to tell you a little bit about her story. And we also have Garrett Ruppenhagen, who was a sniper in Iraq, and he has a very interesting story to tell you as well. Helped form Camp Casey, as well as some other things. IVAW, he's a big part of, and we've got a lot in between that you should check out. So, without further ado, James, would you like to hit up those international headlines?
Yeah, I would. All right, this is a headline that's been all around the news recently. Thousands of Israeli forces have invaded the Gaza Strip for the first time since withdrawing 10 months ago. Israel says it's launched the raid to recover captured soldier Gilad Shalit. Shalit was captured in a Palestinian operation on Sunday. The raid began after Israel rejected Shalit's captors' demand for the release of all Palestinian females and children below the age of 18 in Israeli prisons. Israel opened the attack with a series of airstrikes on three bridges and Gaza's main power station. The attack left the power station in flames and knocked out electricity in most of Gaza City. In another development, militants in the West Bank said they had abducted a Jewish settler and would kill him if the Israelis continued its operations in Gaza. Also, Israeli aircraft sent missiles tearing through the offices of Palestinian Prime Minister Ismail Haniyeh on Sunday. Defense Minister Amir Peretz told a cabinet meeting that Israel would go after higher caliber targets in the future, a reference to senior Hamas officials inside and outside the Palestinian territories. A high-ranking political official said, Palestinians said two missiles fired by attack helicopters sent Haniyeh's office ablaze, but it was empty because of the early hour at 1:45 a.m. So far, the ground invasion has been focused on southern Gaza, where Israel believes Shalit was taken after being seized last week in a cross-border raid. On Sunday, officials decided to invade northern Gaza if rocket fire on southern Israel resumes from that area, security officials said. There has been no rocket fire since Saturday night. And I got a headline from the BBC. A senior Cuban official has sharply criticized a U.S. report on the future of Cuba after Fidel Castro leaves office. A draft of the report calls for a democracy fund to boost opposition to Cuba's communist government. The report is being issued by the Commission for Assistance to a Free Cuba, created by President Bush in 2003. The president of the Cuban parliament, Ricardo Alarcón, feels there is cause for anger and even concern. Mr. Alarcón describes the report as nothing short of an aberration, which should be read as an act of war, as it publicly contemplates how to bring the government of a sovereign foreign nation to an end. A draft version of the report by the commission, a final version of which is due out next week, calls on President Bush to create an $80 million pro-democracy fund to boost support for political opponents of the island's communist government. It also says that Cuba, along with its political ally Venezuela, are a threat to political and democratic stability in Latin America. And it says President Hugo Chavez of Venezuela has been subverting democracy in Cuba by giving money and financial assistance to the Cuban government. Castro, who's been in power since 1959, turns 80 in August. And Christian should follow me up.
Yes, I will follow you up, senor. And I'm going to follow you up with Bolivia. Bolivia votes on Morales' reforms. From Reuters. Recently in La Paz, Bolivia, they went to the polls, yes, those citizens of Bolivia, to elect the National Assembly to rewrite the Constitution, a project President Evo Morales says will give more power to the country's poor indigenous majority. Constitutional reform was a major election promise of leftist Morales, who took office as the South American country's first indigenous president in January, vowing to end 500 years of domination by a white elite. Sunday's vote, which includes a referendum on greater regional autonomy, is his first electoral test, and polls suggest his party will win a big majority in the Constitutional Assembly. campaigning on behalf of assembly delegates from his party. Morales, who nationalized the energy industry in May, has pushed the nationalization of all natural resources in the gas and mineral-rich country, without saying exactly how. He is also campaigning for a no vote on the regional autonomy referendum, which analysts say could put him on a collision course with the powerful pro-autonomy lobby of wealthy Santa Cruz province, the opposition stronghold. Quote, "We're not going to fight our brothers, but it's now or never for autonomy," end quote, pro-autonomy leader German Antelo told flag-waving Santa Cruz residents during a rally to back a yes vote. Local media said 200,000 people attended. And moving on, failure to deliver on G8 pledges has left millions to die, says charity report. This is from The Independent. The huge pledges of aid, debt relief, and trade reforms that were promised at last year's G8 conference in Glen Eagles have not been delivered, according to a report by ActionAid. Next week sees the first anniversary of the summit, which coincided with the Make Poverty History campaign and Live Aid concerts. Tony Blair claimed a moral and political victory in the negotiations, which led to a canceling of debt for the 18 poorest countries in the world, as well as a doubling of the aid budget, better access to HIV drugs, and fundamental reform of the U.S. and EU subsidy systems. Writing in The Independent, the Prime Minister, Tony Blair, insists there has been a, quote, great deal of progress in many areas, end quote, over the past 12 months, but acknowledges that there have been disappointments, particularly the failure to reach a global trade deal. And in a speech, he will hail the agreement reached at Glen Eagles. But much detailed analysis by the charity ActionAid strikes a more pessimistic tone, concluding that many of the much-lauded commitments from the world's most powerful leaders have not been met. Its report, entitled Mission Unaccomplished and seen by The Independent, says millions of lives are still being lost in Africa and the rest of the developing world by the failure of Western countries to live up to the favorable headlines generated by the summit. The charity is calling for the millions of people who supported the Make Poverty History campaign to use the first anniversary to increase pressure on the government over the failed pledges. And James, would you like to hit up?
Yeah, let's bring it down to the local for you guys. From the Baltimore Examiner, a Finksburg man is seeking $2 million in damages in a lawsuit against local businesses and the State Highway Administration, alleging that past and current underground storage tanks on his property contaminated his drinking water and gave him cancer. Plaintiff Jeffrey Dick says, "When my filters are off, my water smells like paint thinner." The five defendants are past and present owners near Dick's home, SHA, Later LLC, Wants Construction Company, Green Prop Inc., and Stephen Eva Timchilla. In 2005, Dix was diagnosed with non-Hodgkin's lymphoma and underwent chemotherapy. And another headline from the Baltimore Examiner, state and county officials closed several Baltimore area beaches and issued health advisories Friday as a severed sewage pipe spewed gallons of raw waste into a Rosedale Stream and Chesapeake Bay tributaries. Heavy winds and rain earlier this week damaged a 36-inch pipe late Thursday morning, according to Baltimore County officials. The sewage continued to spill at 1,600 gallons per minute into Friday evening. Baltimore County officials posted a water contact alert for Back River residents, advising them not to swim in or drink the water, and closed Rocky Point Beach. And from the Diamondback, multi-million dollar makeover is headed for Bird Stadium following a $35 million loan from the state, which the Board of Regents approved Friday. In addition to approving the new loan, the board elected Clifford Kendall as its new chairman during the annual meeting at Frostburg State University. It also approved a bachelor's degree in music education and a doctoral degree in anthropology for the university. The loan, which was granted to the athletics department, will fund 60 luxury suites, rails to the lower level aisles, chair backs, and additional handicapped seating. The press box inside Tyser Tower will also be expanded to make the stadium more symmetrical. The athletics department is in process of hiring a designer who will take about a year to finalize the plans for the stadium starting in the fall. Afterwards, contractors will be allowed to bid on building rights for the stadium additions. And Christian, follow me up with some more local headlines.
And to finish it off, DC Slots canvassers have been deployed recently. This is from the Washington Post. Out-of-town canvassers have begun a frenzied push to collect about 19,000 signatures by July 10th to place a video slots initiative on the November ballot. Those circulating petitions are camped out in front of grocery stores and metro stops, mostly in Paris, earning $2 for each valid signature they get from a DC voter. I actually was confronted by one yesterday, and their actions are under intense scrutiny because a similar effort 2 years ago was derailed by widespread election law violations, including fraud and a hefty fine for the slots proponents who hired them. Canvassers amassed 56,000 signatures in 5 days, but the DC Board of Elections ruled that many of them had been forged or improperly collected. The Political Action Committee, formed to lead the new effort, contends that this time it is different, that workers have been trained and warned to follow the law. And finally, I'd like to make a special report on the Troops Home Fest that James and I attended yesterday. Code Pink, as well as many other groups, have launched a hunger strike. It began with the, quote, Last Supper, end quote, at 5 p.m. yesterday in front of the White House. Starting at midnight last night, all who signed up, which are in the thousands, will begin to fast for peace. The fasters are demanding that we bring our troops home from Iraq. They want the White House and Congress to call for, one, the withdrawal of all U.S. from Iraq, two, no permanent bases in Iraq, and three, a commitment to fund a massive reconstruction effort, but with funds going to Iraqi, not U.S. contractors. Fasters include Cindy Sheehan of Gold Star Families for Peace, Medea Benjamin of Global Exchange and Code Pink, Daniel Ellsberg, Pentagon whistleblower, Dick Gregory, comedian and civil rights activist, Diane Wilson, environmental activist, Anne Wright, colonel and former U.S. diplomat, Willie Nelson, Sean Penn, Michael Fronte, British MP George Galloway, Michael Burke, Ray McGovern, Lieutenant Aaron Watada, Reverend Sekou, Reverend Yearwood, and Reverend Sharpton, Brother Ali, and James and I, as well as many others. I hope you check it out. In front of Lafayette Park, we'll talk more about that later. But now it's time to get into a fresh song. James, what you got there?
Well, Earth, Wind, and Fire. All right. Do you remember that day in September?
Thank you.
Yeah, that was Earth, Wind, and Fire. We're going to get into you right now with some statistics. Got a few here. Let's see. In news from Iraq, the United Nations has estimated 150,000 Iraqis have been displaced from their homes in the past 4 months due to increased fighting. The mass displacement began after the bombing of a Shiite shrine in Samarra in Friday. February, I don't know why I said Friday, sorry. Anyway, another stat here. U.S. military admits security not improving. Yeah, it says barely improved in Baghdad despite a two-week-old security clampdown involving 75,000 Iraqis and U.S. troops. And this is from Common Dreams. Let's see. American cars and pickup trucks are responsible for nearly half of greenhouse gases emitted by automobiles globally, even though the nation's vehicles make up just 30% of the nearly 700 million cars in use. And according to a report by an environmental group due out today, U.S. cars and light trucks were driven 2.6 trillion miles in 2004, equal to driving back and forth to Pluto more than 470 times. Christian, what you got for me?
And to finish off those statistics, a report has said that military equipment costs are to triple. The Associated Press is reporting the annual cost of maintaining military equipment in Iraq and Afghanistan is expected to triple next year to more than $17 billion. Some estimates now put war costs over the last 5 years at almost half a trillion dollars. And finally, a poll shows the U.S. is split on a withdrawal timetable. A new poll shows Americans are nearly evenly split on setting a deadline for the withdrawal of U.S. troops from Iraq. According to the Washington Post and ABC News, the number of Americans favoring a timetable has grown 8 points to 47%. 51% opposed setting a deadline. And now, we're going to get into a little PSA.
Melting polar ice was a dirty look. Shrinking glaciers, a nudge. Dying forests, they were a tap on the shoulder. We got a finger in our chest from the rising sea level, and a sharp poke in the ribs from recent wildfires in Alaska. Then dying coral reefs and eroding coastlines pushed us hard. The drowned polar bears, that was a shove. Melting permafrost, that was a slap. Rising ocean temperatures and extreme weather, an uppercut. Then record-breaking heat waves hit us right where it hurts. Has it occurred to anyone that maybe the Earth is trying to get our attention?
We can still reduce greenhouse gas pollution before it's too late. To find out how, go to fightglobalwarming.com. Brought to you by Environmental Defense, the Robertson Foundation, and the Ad Council.
We'd like to encourage you guys to check out WMUC, which the website's at WMUCradio.com. We got all the archives from the last week from shows out here, and you should definitely check them out. They're awesome people. Hooked us up. I don't know, this is a dream come true talking on the radio for you guys. But yeah, was it Wednesday nights is Third World Radio?
Nah, Sunday nights.
Oh, Sunday nights, sorry.
6 to 9 p.m. Yeah, check it out, Third Rail Radio, live music.
Come to the studio to see some live music Sunday nights. You can check out WMUC on LiveJournal, on Facebook, Friendster. Just search WMUC, you'll find it. And, yeah.
And don't forget to check us out. It's That Fresh Radio Piece, a counterbalance to the fair imbalance. We got a website, thatfreshradiopiece.com. It's good. Check it out.
That's good.
And you can always access all our archives, so yeah, check that out. And now it's time to finish our headlines, national headlines. James, would you like to get a go-ahead of that?
Why not? Supreme Court largely upheld the Texas congressional districts engineered by former House Majority Leader Tom DeLay that helped the Republicans gain 6 more House seats in the 2004 elections. However, the court said one district represented by Republican Representative Harry Bonilla unconstitutionally diluted the Latino vote. The Democrats and minority groups that challenged the district map approved by the Republican state legislature in 2003 called the 2003 redistricting a unconstitutional power grab. The court held that nothing in the Constitution limited the states to a single redistricting every 10 years, possibly causing, possibly allowing much more redistricting to happen in the future. In November 2002, Texas voters elected 17 Democrats and 15 Republicans to the House. But Republicans emerged from that same election with majorities in both houses of the state legislature. At delay's urging, the legislature undertook to redraw its U.S. congressional district at boundaries. In the political firestorm that erupted, some Democrat legislators had at one point took refuge in Oklahoma to deny the legislature the quorum needed to operate. But ultimately, DeLay's plan prevailed, and in the 2004 congressional elections, Democrats won only 11 Texas seats to the Republicans' 21. And you should definitely check out more on that. I just saw a movie called The Big Buy about Tom DeLay, which I highly suggest. And yeah, check that out. But before you do that, Governor Arnold Schwarzenegger's office is in charge of protecting California against terrorism, has tracked demonstrations staged by political and anti-war groups, a practice that senior law enforcement officials say is abuse of civil liberties. The Times obtained reports prepared for the State Office of Homeland Security in recent months that contained details on the whereabouts and purpose of a number of political demonstrations throughout California. California Attorney General Bill Lockyer's office learned of the monitoring activity more than 2 months ago. On Friday, a spokesperson condemned the action, saying, "That kind of conduct by anti-terrorism intelligence agencies threatens civil liberties, runs counter to our values, and violates this office's policy regarding criminal intelligence gathering." Copies of the report were shared with California Highway Patrol and the Attorney General's office. Nothing else was done with the information about the demonstrations, Bertelli, spokesman for the State Department, said. The reports obtained by the Times contain summaries of news articles about the war in Iraq, animal rights activists, and terrorism. One has a section titled Upcoming California Protests, followed by summaries of the demonstrations. Each includes an entry for officer safety issues, despite no issues being cited. And Christian has some national headlines. Pretty short.
Yo, it's from MSNBC. Justices say Bush went too far at Guantanamo. The 5-3 ruling in one of the biggest presidential powers cases since World War II. Supreme Court ruled Thursday that President Bush overstepped his authority in creating military war crime trials for Guantanamo Bay detainees, a rebuke to the administration and its aggressive anti-terror policies. Justice John Paul Stevens wrote the opinion, which said the proposed trials were illegal under U.S. law and the Geneva Convention. The case, one of the most significant involving presidential war powers cases since World War II, was brought by Guantanamo prisoner Salim Ahmed Hamdan, who was a driver for Osama bin Laden in Afghanistan. The vote was split 5-3, with moderate Justice Anthony Kennedy joining the court's liberal members in ruling against the Bush administration. Chief Justice John Roberts, named to the court last September by Bush, was sidelined in the case because, as an appeals court judge, he had backed the government over Hamdan. Thursday's ruling overturned that decision. After the September 11th attacks, Bush established special war crimes tribunals for trying prisoners held at the U.S. base at Guantanamo Bay in Cuba. Of about 450 prisoners at Guantanamo, only Hamdan and 9 others faced charges before a tribunal. Human rights groups have criticized the tribunals, formerly called military commissions, for being fundamentally unfair. And finally, 10 grannies for peace arrested in Philly. This is from the Seattle Post-Intelligencer. Police arrested 10 elderly members of the anti-war group called the Granny Peace Brigade, who refused to leave a military recruiting center Wednesday after they were told they were too old to enlist. I actually saw these ladies yesterday, and you should check them out sometime. Several dozen protesters, some using wheelchairs, canes, or walkers, and many sporting flower festoon hats, held signs and chanted outside the downtown Armed Forces Recruiting Center, Some drivers waved and honked their horns in support, and the grandmothers replied by cheering and clapping. A few of the women went inside the recruiting facility to speak with military recruiters and to try to dissuade those who arrived to enlist. Quote, were saying, "I've lived my life. Let me go to Iraq instead of our grandchildren, so they have a chance to live their lives," end quote, said Jean Haskell, 74, a grandmother of five from Philadelphia. The grandmothers were joined in front of the recruiting center by members of other anti-war organizations, whose members chanted, quote, "We insist, let the grannies enlist," end quote. And that concludes our headlines for today. It's that fresh radio piece, A Counterbalance to the Fair and Balanced. And now we're going to get into a little Pacific theme, all right? Here we go. We'll be right back. seems like we've got a special caller today. Would you like to introduce yourself over there?
Hey, how you guys doing? My name is Hannah Sassaman, and I'm with a little group called the Prometheus Radio Project, based in Philadelphia, and we build radio stations. It's a pleasure to be on WMUC this morning.
Hey, we're glad to have you. And so, could you talk about the current bill in Congress right now? We spoke a little bit last week about net neutrality, the amendment to expand low-power FM. Could you put it in a nutshell for our listeners?
Sure. Everyone who's listening right now should know that your station is, like, up for to get a lot of brothers and sisters all across the country. There's a bill called Senate Bill 2686. This is a huge telecommunications bill. It's like when Congress decides to throw everything in the kitchen sink having to do with communications into one piece of legislation. They are trying to find out whether or not the American public cares about how fast it gets any internet page it wants to access, whether or not they're willing to tolerate slower speeds for less money. They're trying to find out whether or not we care in our communities about defending our public access TV stations, fighting to have our community voices on TV, on stations all across the country. And they're trying to find out whether or not we care about expanding low-power community radio stations, just like WMUC 88.1, to thousands of communities across the United States. So folks in Baltimore, Maryland, can have the incredible power of a real station where they can talk to the DJs sitting at the mic, where they can hear about local debates and make sure that they're informed and their families are informed, or if they're just willing to listen to Clear Channel. So if you're interested in supporting the expansion of low-power FM, you can call your senator and ask him to support the expansion of community radio on Senate Bill 2686. Or if you're interested in being up to the second informed about how this bill is going, about whether or not it's going to in full help your community, or it's going to keep your community from determining locally what its communications future is going to be, like whether or not they're going to be able to have fair, cheap, locally determined internet access, cable access, and radio access, or it's going to be controlled from big companies based in Washington, D.C., I would recommend that you go to saveaccess.org and savetheinternet.com. It's just one battle happening this year that you need to get involved with.
And so, Hannah, we understand that the COPE bill recently got through the House of Representatives, and so now the Senate is debating their own version. Could you talk about the version that went through the House and how that differs from the current one being debated?
The version that, I was just talking about a big Senate bill that's moving pretty fast. It just got through the Commerce Committee, and it's going to go to the floor of the full Senate, meaning that every senator in the country is going to have to decide about your communications future. Lucky for us, or terrible for us, actually, all of our Congress members have already made that decision. There was a bill that went through the House of Representatives. It passed overwhelmingly, Republicans and Democrats basically voting together, with a few people dissenting, that did a few things. Number one, it limited net neutrality provisions, meaning that, let's say that Comcast lays the line to your house after you guys move off campus, you know, get your million-dollar paying job and start to, you know, rake in the big bucks just like your parents wanted you to do, but you get Comcast or Verizon DSL and cable. And they start paying you $100 a month, or you pay them $100, $150 a month for all of your communications needs. No matter what, like if you don't have strong net neutrality provisions enshrined into law, what's going to happen is that if Comcast decides that they don't like, for example, the WMUC website, or if they're not interested in a local community paper, or if they're not interested in a local Planned Parenthood or a local health clinic or any kind of local community organization that isn't associated with Comcast and Verizon getting their information to you, so you can participate in and engage like in the community, just like the internet has allowed us to do since really it's become an international resource. They can erode that content. They can make it so slow for for when you load up those pages that it's basically impossible to read them. A bill that does not protect that standard just went through the House of Representatives. And because we're in an era right now when the big communications companies are consolidating, meaning that Verizon, like the baby bells, like all of these phone companies that are across the United States, like SBC, AT&T, Verizon, they're all becoming basically one company, and they're starting to provide the video service that you're used to getting over cable. Because this is happening and those companies are entering the video market, they are going to be able to restrict our access to what websites we want to see and what websites we want to put on the air, and they're going to restrict our access as well. This is something else that passed on the COPE Act to local community television. Across the country, there are thousands of public, educational, and government TV stations that in the 70s and 80s, our parents basically fought to preserve across the country. So we could do everything from watch a local basketball game to participate in a local church service to follow a local city council meeting. With the new bill, with the COPE Act, and potentially also with the Senate bill, Senate Bill 2686, we're going to lose our access to those public TV stations. They're going to get negotiated on a national level, so eventually they're going to get phased out of existence. So folks at the Alliance for Community Media and SaveAccess.org are fighting tooth and nail to protect our access to those TV stations. You can get involved at SaveAccess.org, SaveTheInternet.com. It's really important that you call both your senators and your Congress members and tell them that it's important that you control your local media.
Yeah, definitely. And on that note, do you want to talk a little bit more about low-power FM, like the importance of it in your mind and what Prometheus is doing around the world to sponsor that?
Sure. So the station that you're listening to right now, which is an incredible station built by local engineers serving a local community, we have been lucky enough to build low-power FM stations quite a lot like that in the United States and around the world. In 2000, folks from the pirate radio movement, these are civil rights leaders, church leaders, people fighting for economic and health justice all across the country, got together and forced the FCC to establish a low-power FM radio service where we could have a community station in our town. You could just walk up to the door, get on the air, and listen to news being produced by your neighbors and by people who are active in your community, and it's organizing and it's politics. It's done incredible stuff for folks all across the United States. One example I really like to tell is the story of Radio Conciencia. It's a station that some farm workers use in Southwest Florida with a group called the Coalition of Immokalee Workers. These folks speak Spanish primarily as a second language. Many of them speak Zapotec and Quiche, which are indigenous Mexican and Guatemalan languages. And so there was no media serving them. They didn't have any media where they could learn about their rights and connect back to various aspects of their culture. So at any rate, this community honored Prometheus, my organization, by inviting us in December 2003 to help put their station, Radio Conciencia, on the air. When the hurricanes came through, a number of the workers, these are folks who primarily they pick watermelons, tomatoes, a number of the workers were hired by a company called the Balance Corporation to do some debris removal, some pickup in the streets of Immokalee after the hurricanes went through. They worked for 1 week. They worked for 2 weeks. They didn't get paid. So this radio station is on the air. One of the workers from the coalition called the radio station and said, "Hey, how you doing? You know, this is a great show. I listen to it every day. I just wanted to say that we didn't get paid. A number of the workers who are doing this cleanup haven't been paid, and we want to know what we should do about it." So the DJ at the station said, "Well, that's really interesting. Why don't you come down the station, and anyone who wants to talk about it, we can have a meeting and talk about this problem." So 300 workers show up at Radio Conciencia. They talk throughout the night. They talk all night long. And by the end of the night, they have made it so the president of the Balance Corporation has come down with the $56,000 that the workers were owed, with a check for that amount of money. So that's what a community can do when it has its own radio station. It can redress the ills of society, one thing that it can do. It can also make sure that local music, local culture that don't get out on Clear Channel, which just seems to be really excited about playing the worst music ever, You can really put community voices on the air and have local musicians really get a leg up. There's a station we built in Portsmouth, New Hampshire, WSCA, that since it came on the air, the local music scene has just exploded. And so these are the kinds of stations that we are also really honored to be invited to build. You can ask your senator to support the expansion of Low Power FM by calling them up and saying, we would like you to support Low Power FM on Senate Bill 2686, and just, it's a great service. This is another thing you can do. You can call your Congress member and say, when you are taking this bill, the COPE Act, and you're taking a look at this other bill that might pass, which is going through the House right now, the Senate right now, Senate Bill 2686, we're going to have to reconcile these bills. So if they both pass, and we're definitely not sure that we want them to pass, because there's all kinds of other challenges going on in the bill, and so, but if they pass, when they come to conference committee, we want to make sure that those senators and Congress members preserve the amendment that got put on there that would expand low power radio. So it's something that you just got to talk about. The more we talk about the importance of these stations, like WMUC, which I know is fighting for its life right now, and the more that we try to spread the word in the U.S. and around the world, we've built stations in Colombia, Guatemala, we've done work in Nepal, the more likely it is that we'll have our own media outlets to fight for the communication rights of our communities across the world.
Hannah, on Low Power FM, I wanted to talk more about putting this in perspective as far as the importance of this provision. I heard that as many as 2,000 what stations can be created out of this. How big is that on the scale of things? Like, how rare is this? That kind of thing, to put it in perspective for people that aren't too familiar with this concept of low power FM and its history.
Right now in the United States is about 750 low power FM stations, meaning it's like 100 watts. They go about 15 miles. It's about the power of a light bulb, a bunch stronger than WMUC, which is a much smaller wattage. There's about 750 of those stations around the country. They're in pretty small places. They're in places like Spokane, Washington, rather than Seattle, Washington. They're in, what town are you guys located in?
College Park.
You guys are in College Park, Maryland, rather than in Baltimore. There are stations in Opelousas, Louisiana, rather than New Orleans, right? So it's smaller towns and cities across the U.S. So these stations provide a lot of impact, but not for millions of people, but for thousands. If you had a station that was 100 watts in downtown Baltimore, you could potentially reach hundreds and thousands of people. In 2000, the National Association of Broadcasters, it's the big group that represents big corporate radio and corporate TV across the U.S., they heard that low-power FM stations were starting to get licensed and that they would be built in large cities. In every large city in the country, except for New York, Los Angeles, and Chicago, whose airwaves were already too full to allow for a 100-watt radio station, basically. And so what they did is they tried to convince the FCC that if you put a low-power FM radio station on the dial next to a full-power station in a big city, that it would cause interference, that there would literally be a crackling on the dial because of it. So they weren't able to convince the FCC of this, who thought it was really like just like a big load of you-know-what, but they were able to convince Congress that they needed to restrict low-power FM and make sure that you could only have it in really rural communities across the U.S. where there were more gophers in a field than there were people, or cows, potentially, if you were lucky. So what this amendment that has already been appended to Senate Bill 2686 will do, what this amendment will do if it passes and or if it comes forward on another bill, is let big cities get low power FM, which is staggering. It means a city like Minneapolis might have 4 to 6 stations. Philadelphia, where I live, might have 1 or 2. Baltimore might have 1 or 2. And if you have densely packed houses with folks from all over the world living in a small community, using a low-power FM radio station, you can reach so, so many people. Prometheus came from a group called Radio Mutiny in Philadelphia, which at its peak had 70 programmers from all over the world. This was an unlicensed pirate radio station. It had Ethiopian and Eritrean public affairs and news. It had a sexual health 70s prog rock show. It had Jamaican ministers. It had local radical news shows and music shows. It was really It's a station that really represented the diversity of its community and served that diversity. I know that all listeners of WMUC understand how staggering it is if we have thousands more radio stations, thousands across the U.S., providing that diversity. Right now, Clear Channel, the largest radio owner in the United States, owns 1,300 stations. When this bill is expanded, when this amendment and this opportunity is expanded, we're going to lap them. We're going to get more stations in the hands of communities than in the hands of the largest radio owner in the United States.
And to close it off, Hannah, could you throw out some information on how people can get more educated, how they can get involved, and about Prometheus Radio Project, how they can find out more about the great things y'all are doing?
Well, thanks so much for having us on. It's really great to participate in this morning's program. We are building our next station. We're invited all the time to build stations over a three-day weekend with community groups across the country. If any of you listeners are going to be out west this summer, we'll be building a station August 18th through 20th. In Portland, Oregon, or just south of Portland, Oregon, in a small town called Woodburn, with a community that is also a farm worker group called the Piñeros y Campesinos Unidos de Noroeste, PICUN. So we would love to see anybody from your organization and listening to this broadcast there. You can learn more about how to fight for your own low-power FM community radio station and how to support stations like WMUC 88.1 by going to Prometheus Radio. It's Prometheus, as in Sam, radio.org. Or you can call us at 215-727-9620.
Thanks a lot, Hannah. We'll definitely keep in touch.
All right. It was really fun to be on. All right. Have a nice day, y'all.
Take care.
Bye-bye.
And that was Hannah Sassaman of the Prometheus Radio Project. Some great people there. We had been talking to them, conversing with them throughout the year, but we finally got to meet them. James did, actually. I got knocked out with an ear infection, but at the Allied Media Conference.
Yeah, they just had a caucus of radio experts there, and everyone just came to the discussion, said what they thought, what their concerns were about radio, and just they just had a lot of people there who had come from different walks of life, different areas of radio, who knew what they were talking about, and they gave me a lot of advice, and I don't know, it definitely made the Allied Media Conference for me. It was an awesome time.
Yeah, so definitely check out Prometheus Radio Project, and I hope you all...
PrometheusRadio.org.
Yeah, and SaveAccess.org. This is big. This is crucial. We can't stress that enough. But for now, a little Ani DeFranca.
They were digging a new foundation in Manhattan, and they discovered a slave cemetery there. May their souls rest easy now that lynching is frowned upon. We've moved on to the electric chair. And I wonder who's gonna be president, Tweedledum or Tweedledummer? And who's gonna have the big blockbuster box office this summer? How about we put up a wall between the houses and the highway, and then you can go your way and I can go my way. Except all the radios agree with all the TVs, and the magazines agree with all the radios, and I keep hearing that same damn song everywhere I go. Maybe I should put a bucket over my head and a marshmallow in each ear and stumble around for another dum-dum week for another humdrum hit song to appear. People used to make records as in a record of an event, the event of people playing music in a room. Now everything is cross-marketing. It's about sunglasses and shoes or guns and drugs, you choose. We got it rehashed. We got it half-assed. We're digging up all the graves and we're spitting on the past. And we can choose between the colors of the lipstick on the whores, because we know the difference between the font of 20% more and the font of teriyaki. You tell me, how does it make you feel? You tell me what's real. And they say that alcoholics are always alcoholics, even when they're dry as my lips for years. even when they're stranded on a small desert island with no place in 2,000 miles to buy beer. And I wonder, is he different? Is he different? Has he changed what he's about? Or is he just a liar with nothing to lie about? Am I headed for the same brick wall? Is there anything I can do about anything at all except go back to that corner in Manhattan and dig deeper this time? Down beneath the impossible pain of our history, beneath unknown bones, beneath the bedrock of the mystery, beneath the sewage system and the path train, beneath the cobblestones and the water main, beneath the traffic of friendships and street deals, beneath the screeching of kamikaze cab wheels, beneath everything I can think of to think about, beneath all, get out, beneath the good and the kind and the stupid and the cruel, there's a fire that's just waiting for fuel. There's a fire 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 just
Yo, so you're listening to
that fresh radio piece?
Yeah, a counterbalance to the fair imbalance, my friends. This is WMUC FM, College Park, 88.1 FM. Yo, go to thatfreshradiopiece.com if you want the archives, if you want to look more into the media. We got links to all different types of news organizations and groups that we've had on the show.
Events you can get engaged in the upcoming weeks. And
definitely.
Yeah, we're trying to put everything up on there because we don't know who's listening at 7 in the morning. But
for now, we've got the Dole Foundation. If you were listening last week, you might remember the song. We had this as background. And you know what? We loved it so much, we're going to have to bring it back.